A somewhat popular topic with Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network, is working at home versus working at the office and how not only productive people are, but how happy they are. Welcome back, Tom.
Hey, John. Always good to be with you. Cubs win 500 ball.
You know, the White Sox are on the precipice and for the first time in a long time losing five in a row. So the teams are very quickly sort of putting themselves in the position where we thought they would be. Cubs contending, White Sox not so much, right?
I don't know this other team that you speak of, but I'm very excited about Chicago baseball.
Hey, how excited are you about people working from home? Let's talk about that headline.
Yeah, I believe that for business and continuity and culture, that working together is important in the office. I also believe that the friendships at work that are really important psychologically to people. And do I think that there's always reasons for certain people in certain locations to have remote work or to work from home? Of course. Nothing is a mandate across the spectrum. But I do believe fundamentally that being in the office and getting to talk to people and see them and know their faces and build relationships, there's just a sociological and psychological aspect that's a positive influence on people's lives.
Well, so while you have talked in the past about where's productivity and who's making the rules, this is almost, I don't want to say tough love, but if I were only concerned for your emotional well-being, your happiness, I would advise you that while you might not want to go back to the office much, you're going to be happier or better for it. And we're talking about the youngest employees. We're talking about Gen Zers who maybe don't have a foundation professionally and all of those well-established work friendships. Now you're just working from home, and you really do need to get out of that bubble. That's what this Wall Street Journal piece says.
Yeah, I think the comparable is probably, you know what, I don't want to go to the gym and work out. My weight's fairly under control, blah, 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 and so I'm not going to. But if you get off your butt and you go to the gym and you work out, not only are you physically better, you're emotionally better. And you may be able to do things at home and do your job, and maybe you're productive, maybe you're not. But when you go to the office, there's a social interaction that channels your brain that's better. And there's a reason that we want kids to go to school. We don't home. The majority of people don't homeschool their kids. There's a reason for that. It's called the socialization of America.
25% of America's high school and grade school age students are chronically truant now. 25% of kids are chronically truant. They miss 10% or more of their days. And for those 14-year-olds who are showing up, they say that their emotional development has really been stunted by the pandemic, i.e. staying at home. And not that 24-year-olds are 14-year-olds, but I'm with you on this one today, Tom. I think that they're still young people learning in a new environment, how to engage in a new environment, and being in the office is how you do that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a sampling size, or I've got the people who work here at our company at LaSalle Network, and we have a huge under 30 population. And then I've also got a 24-year-old son, a 22-year-old daughter, and a 19-year-old son. And I look at their interactions. I look about when they, coming out of COVID, when they started going back to school and the anxiety they had of going into the classroom for the first time. And my kids are very socially state college type of kids. And I see my son that when he goes into his office, he is in a great emotional place and he has stories to tell and he has interactions and he learns things from people at various times that aren't in meetings. And I see that every once in a while when he has a remote work day, that it's not the same. And does he ever say to me, oh, I got a lot done today with no one interrupting? Of course he does. Yes, that's true. But there's also the social interaction that is so a part of the human spirit.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's funny because I met some of those young people that work for you at an event last year, and they were all looking to be in their mid-20s, and were all so handsome, healthy, and happy, I almost thought you had hired them, that they were fake employees.
Well, I didn't look at their activity report this week, John. Maybe they are fake employees. But no, in all seriousness, it is. There's different types of people, but I would challenge. I'll tell you this: we did a survey internally about coming into the office and the positivity. And I had an introvert who works for me. She's an administrative person, professional, and she came to me. She's been with me for 20 years, and she came to me and she said, "You know what's funny? You talked about the extroverts needing it. Not everybody's an introvert and can work alone." She said, "I'm an introvert, and this is the socialization I get in my life.
Yeah.
And this is crucial for my mental well-being to interact with people, because otherwise, I don't know where I'd go to find it."
Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Nice to talk to you, Tom.
Stay warm. Go Cubs.
Jason Lesnevich is the director of cultural tourism at Choose Chicago. I saw the story the other day, or at least a headline, Jason, that Chicago will be the only city in America with a satellite film fest, an offshoot of the Sundance Film Fest. Am I reading that right?
You are, in a sense. We do have a partnership with the Sundance Institute to bring an event to Chicago, a weekend event. I wouldn't necessarily call it a film festival, but it will definitely feature film screenings from their festival back in January. But different in the sense that it's not a true film festival, but we'll have screenings and other programming.
I call that a festival. So June 28th through the 30th, so the end of the month. Well, then what is coming to Chicago? What are we doing?
Yeah, so we will select four films from their festival that were shown in Park City, Utah in January. These films will be the first time they'll be screened in Chicago. We'll have a chance to see those films multiple times. We'll screen them at different venues throughout the city. And that's the big public-facing aspect of it. But we will have panel discussions around topics that were shown in the screens. There'll be three of those. Those will be free and to join those panel discussions. Then the Sundance team itself, the Sundance Institute, will do a master class with their shorts programmer, so a master class on shorts. Many filmmakers start their career by doing shorts first, and so there's a great program for emerging filmmakers. And then they'll do another presentation on their CoLab program, which is another program on how they give resources and nurture young emerging filmmakers.
Now, you said four films from the Sundance Film Fest will travel to Chicago. Do we know the four films?
We do not yet. Those are being discussed right now in terms of the venues as well. We hope to release the programming in a few weeks, so you will know what the full programming schedule looks like. And you can always stay up to date on our website to get all the latest announcements about this event.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. Although if it's in multiple venues, maybe I won't have trouble finding a seat, but I presume you'll be at the Siskel Theater or the Music Box, some of those places?
We have such great, independent film houses. And so, yeah, looking into all those ones you mentioned, but also looking down for a Southside venue. We want to make sure these screens are accessible to all Chicagoans, and so they're not traveling across the city to see some of these featured films. So we hope to have, a venue on the north and downtown and the south side for sure.
Are they going to hand us the films, or do you or somebody get to, on our end, pick the four that we want?
Yeah, we're in direct discussions with their programming team, and we talk about the films we want to invite. So it is a process. We invite the films out, and they have to accept, and then we start inviting the director and some of the actors to join the weekend, because we want them to be part of the Q&A sessions after the screenings or the introductions, and be part of the panels themselves. So trying to get those films locked in so we can get all of our talent here for the weekend to interact with the Chicago community as well.
Get a movie with Taylor Swift. I mean, I could see how it would be tempting then to not necessarily pick the films that are the best or most diverse, but rather what has the most star power. But then maybe the stars don't want to show up. I could see how this would be a sort of calculated decision on your part.
Yeah, we really want to showcase a wide variety of stories. The Chicago community is such so diverse. So with only four films, we are being pretty particular on what stories and what films we want to present. But all of them will be great showcases here in Chicago being screened for the first time.
And you say all that without even yet knowing the films that you have to choose from, right?
Well, I know some. I know the ones we've invited. I just can't.
For goodness sakes. What have you invited? Okay, can you tell me what kind of movies? Give me a general description, a sports film, a love story. What are we looking at?
No, we want to mix it up as well. So some documentaries, some featured films that were part of their national category for featured films. And a little bit of both. Documentaries, featured films, I would say is where we're leaning.
When are we going to find out? Publicly,
we hope to release the movie selections by early May, end of this month. People can sign up for updates on our website, and you'll get that information first right to your inbox.
Is that Sundance Institute X Chicago?
.com. Yes.
Okay, so go to Sundance Institute X Chicago .com. The folks from Choose Chicago have the enviable task of picking the films, and I'm really glad about this, Jason. Maybe this will even grow year after year, but it's a good start.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Jason Lesnevich is with Choose Chicago. He's the director of cultural tourism here. By the way, Tom Gimbel was on with us a few minutes ago, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. He was talking about the value that particularly young employees get from going to work in the office. It's a popular topic with Tom. He wants you in the office as much as you can be. But there was even a piece in the Wall Street Journal that said the emotional mental development of particularly young employees is enhanced when they're not just working from home. You got to get into the office to get that interaction. 630 texted in and said, "Hi, John, there's a lot to be said for water cooler discussions." 847, "As for working from home, fine, let the young ones go to the office. I'm so happy when I work from home. I'm in my 50s, and I'm done with being in the office." 708 said, "John, Tom is right. My son and his girlfriend both graduated from the University of Illinois in 2023, and were both lucky to find jobs in their fields. They both work almost always in the office and benefit immensely from the relationships they have formed there. From work dinners to recipe contests, they really enjoy going into work." And yet 608 said, "Yet another guest who seems to think you can only have relationships with coworkers in person. John, don't you make connections with listeners because we're not all in the same room?" Okay, he's not in the same room, but I'm optimistic about this conversation with Philip Shaw, senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. Hi, Philip. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. Looking forward to it.
Well, talk to me about the markets. Good grief. The first quarter has been so good on all the indices, and today it's not.
Yeah, anytime we have a run-up like that, we're still through today up about 9% on, S&P, on NASDAQ. Dow's been doing very well. Anytime we have a run-up like that, we're going to see some of these pullbacks. So it's nothing that's all that concerning to me today, but we'll see where the year goes from here for sure.
Well, some of our guests in the last week or so have said the pullback, if it's a correction, could be a few thousand points. Is that plausible or possible too?
Well, I'd tell you the same thing I'd tell anybody, is none of us know the future, and we don't know what could happen in the world. If something negative happens, if there's a major world event, anything could happen. I don't see anything that's going to lead to a major crash of the stock market at this point. That said, we rarely see these things ahead of time. What I would tell you is best thing is to be prepared and understand where you stand in your life and your investments and goals and time horizon, and make sure that regardless of what happens, you're going to feel okay.
Well, 5% wouldn't be a crash, but that would be a couple thousand points. So I suppose we're due for a little profit taking or rearranging, and maybe that's a little bit of what we're seeing today anyway, huh?
Yeah, and I'd say a lot of that's going to come from, what the Fed decides to do, this month, next, this month and in June. the Fed's going to dictate a lot of what's happening with the market this year, to be sure. I would not expect anything too volatile. Again, 5% on the Dow is not a huge move. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, I'll tell you what the Fed's going to do. There's going to be three corrections or changes this year. They'll drop 75 basis points by New Year's Eve. They'll come in June, October, and December. If I'm even close to right on that, what does that mean for the markets, would you say?
So I fully agree with you. That's the expectation. The Fed has been telegraphing this pretty well of what they're looking for. If that happens, I don't think it's a major change to what the market's expecting today. You know, it'll still be good, but the market's starting to price that into things already. So a lot of the movement we have, the first quarter of this year, the last quarter of 2023, a lot of that is in expectation of the Fed reducing rates this year.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is going to be if they decide in June not to lower rates, not to make any changes, I would fully expect a correction in the market.
A correction to the downside.
Correct.
And why would they not do it then? Why would they keep it where it is?
Well, they're being very hesitant to start lowering rates. They're very concerned that inflation is going to be stickier than what they've expected it to be. You know, they're aiming for 2%, and right now we're still at over a percent higher. We're at 3.2% year-over-year inflation. If that number doesn't start to come down, they're going to be hard pressed to start reducing rates. They're going to feel very confident in keeping things.
But isn't there something, artificial isn't the right word, maybe subjective isn't either, but I mean, what's so magical about 2% versus 3%?
It's a line in the sand of where they've put this target. You know, it's interesting. So I was listening to a former Chicago Fed chair a few years ago talking about the 2% goal on inflation when we were at essentially 0% inflation. And he said, one thing to remember is 2% is an average. So we've spent a considerable portion of the last decade below 2% inflation. We're currently above 2% inflation. 2% is the target, but it's also an average. So I don't know that we necessarily have to hit 2% for the Fed to start reducing rates, but they want to make sure we're at least trending in the right direction.
Well, as much as I think people are concerned about their 401ks or their retirement savings that are to some degree vested in equities, they want to see the market stay strong. But maybe more important than that is inflation, the cost of just buying groceries and gas. Evidently, that's what the Fed's telling us, right?
Yeah, and that's a big concern of the Fed. The Fed's mandate is not to keep the stock market high. It's to keep full employment, and it's to keep low or controlled inflation of goods and services. So that's more so what they're focused on. I will say one of the other things that keeping rates higher for longer does for the Fed is if we do have a recession, if we do have a major pullback in the economy, the Fed tends to reduce interest rates during a recession about 2 to 2.5%. And it's a lot easier to do that from 5 than it is to do that from 2.
Sure. Okay. I have a question about that, though. Stay right there. We're talking with Philip Shaw. He's a senior advisor at Goldstone Financial. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's get you a little more business news first. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. University of Chicago Medical Center medical residents and fellows are forming a union. More than 1,000 of them have announced plans to join the Committee of Interns and Residents, a division of Service Employees International Union. They filed a petition for union election with the National Labor Relations Board. The doctors in training say their goal is to improve working conditions and patient care. Union leaders say the residents are overworked and underpaid. Their organizing effort is part of a larger local and national national trend involving academic medical institutions. Rivian Automotive says it built and delivered more electric vehicles than expected in the first quarter. The company, which operates a manufacturing facility in downstate Normal, built nearly 14,000 EVs in the first 3 months of the year. It delivered nearly all of them. Wall Street was happy with the news, but disappointed that Rivian stood by its 2024 output target. The company projected an output of 57,000 units. Analysts forecast 57,440. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food? Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And I've got a mushroom expert on the phone.
It's Tom Nauman.
Tom's a morel mushroom expert. But before we talk about his morel university, Tom, you know those little toadstools growing out of my lawn?
Oh, yeah.
Is it safe to eat them? His answer, after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, those mushrooms in my yard, are they safe to eat?
No.
Tom Nauman, who lives near Ottawa, Illinois, knows mushrooms. It's his business.
Morel Mania Incorporated, and we are suppliers to mushroom hunters throughout the world.
And he's running Morel University during the big Morel Festival in Ottawa on Saturday, May 4th. Does that make you a professor or a chancellor?
Oh, no, I'm just a fun guy.
What happens at your class?
We'll talk about mushrooms first, then we'll get on buses and go out in the woods and show people how, when, where, and why.
And what's the key to being a good mushroom hunter, Tom?
Mushroom hunting is 90% karma.
What do you mean by that?
Luck. And I can't help anybody with that. But the other 10%, I can teach him how to do it.
It isn't easy being a morel hunter.
They're not easy to find. They only appear for 2 to 5 weeks in the spring.
But there is a payoff.
It's the taste. They've got an earthy, nutty flavor that can't be compared to anything.
And this is really important. Pay attention. Do not eat them as you pick them.
No. In fact, there were two deaths in Bozeman, Montana, where they had prepared morels in a sushi. They weren't cooked very well, and two people passed away, and another 45 became ill. Any wild mushroom needs to be cooked.
Tom Nauman, he'll be running Morel University at the Morel Festival in Ottawa on Saturday, May 4th. All kinds of things going on there that day. Big fun for the whole family. You can read more about it at WGNradio.com or at his business website, morelmania.com. On the food calendar, it's National Peanut Butter and Jelly Sandwich Day. Crunchy and strawberry for me, please. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
A few more minutes then with Philip Shaw, senior advisor at Goldstone Financial. By the way, Philip, you just made a point before the break there about how at least one former Fed chair said it's easier to come down from 5%, say. Was that interest rates or inflation that they were talking about?
They were talking about interest rates. So typically when the economy goes into recession and you see a spike of unemployment, one of the biggest levers the Fed has, really the only one they have, is reducing rates. So typically when you see a recession, they tend to reduce rates about 2 to 2.5%, which, you know, as of a few years ago, wasn't even really possible for them.
Right.
As we had next to 0% interest rates.
Right.
So I think the Fed feels a lot more comfortable, you know, being able to control for that, sitting where they do today, as well as the economy's been doing.
What's the number they're at now? What's the interest rate that they're talking about? What's that baseline?
Where they're going to end?
No, where they are now. I mean, what is the Fed's quote unquote interest rate right now? Is it five and a quarter?
Yeah, 5.25% right now.
Yeah. Just talk to me about costs. Can you talk a little bit about food costs or housing costs? What are some of the numbers that are important out there right now?
Yeah, food and housing have been two of the biggest contributors to inflation. For the day-to-day consumer, I saw a staggering statistic of the amount of people that were doing delivery food and not able to afford it and doing a buy now, pay later method to handle delivery food, which was surprising to me. It's the biggest advice I have for anybody who's really feeling the pinch of inflation and how expensive everything is to be careful about all the little fees you're paying for. If groceries have gotten out of hand, make sure you're doing the shopping yourself. Make sure you're paying attention to, you know, what brand or what the unit cost is of the things that you're buying. And don't do delivery. Don't go out to eat if it's been expensive. Don't do carry or takeout. You know, these things get really expensive, and especially for people that are putting on a credit card or people that are doing a buy now, pay later financing for it, you'd be surprised how much more expensive that became.
What's keeping inflation high, or as high as it is anyway? It's down, but it's not down enough. Is it services? Is it production costs of physical items? What's driving this?
The biggest thing have been energy and housing costs. So, you know, cost of gasoline at the pump and the cost of housing more than anything else is, you know, we're still seeing with low inventory out there, we're seeing record high housing prices. It is a good time or a better time to be a renter for a lot of folks because we have seen rental prices coming down, you know, apartment rentals and the like. But especially housing right now, because of the low inventory, we're still seeing record high prices. And the cost of finance is right up there with it. Yeah. So the cost of housing has been one of the biggest contributors.
But for people who have a, say, lease that's not renewing anytime soon or a mortgage that they were able to get into before interest rates went up, some of those inflationary costs don't affect them, right?
Yeah, you're correct. I tell everybody, inflation is personal to you. I know people that have experienced considerably higher inflation because their expenses tend to involve more travel, more of the leisure activities. And I know people that have next to zero inflation because the majority of their cost was their mortgage and the mortgage was fixed. Yeah. So it's a very personal number to you.
There are ways to make higher interest rates work in your favor, you say. Like what?
So while we have these higher interest rates, if you have extra savings, make sure you're not just putting it in a checking account, not just putting in a savings account. It's really easy to go out, put your money into a high-yield money market, which is a liquid account available to you whenever. You can put it into a CD and lock in interest rates for a period of time. You can buy treasuries from the federal government. But you can make about 5.5% between the vehicles and who you're talking to. And 5.5% on savings is really helping you offset that inflation number.
It's higher than the inflation rate for sure, although the difference isn't that great, but it's better than 0.1%, which some savings accounts were getting not that long ago. And in fact, we had a guest on the other day from Bankrate who said there's almost a dozen different lending banks out there which have now savings accounts. You got to find them, but are paying 4 or 5%. I was surprised to hear that.
It's been a really great opportunity for savers. Yeah. But more than anything is, you know, you always want to take a step back, look at your financial situation, assess and evaluate where you stand, see if you can pay off high interest rate debt, because that's only getting worse. See if there's things you can put to work in your savings, and just do an evaluation for yourself. Talk to a professional if you need to, but evaluate and say, where do I stand? Are there ways I can do better?
Philip Shaw is a professional senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group, goldstonefinancialgroup.com. Hey, Philip, nice to talk to you today. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thanks again for having me.